1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feldis and Kale, and we are here and glad you are as well. And we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And our guest today on Feldis and Kale is a two-sport athlete, the only person to ever compete in the Olympics as an active NFL player, then go on to win a Super Bowl. As a matter of fact, he won three Super Bowls with the Patriots and participated in the 2016 Rio Olympics as one of 12 members of the U.S. rugby team. Now a free agent, last season played with the New York Giants, Nate Ebner. Nate, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, it is certainly our pleasure. And the name of your new book that you have written along with Paul Daugherty is Finish Strong, A Father's Code and A Son's Path. Nate, yeah. tell us about that title.
Well, obviously, it's a story about a father-son relationship. That's a huge part of it. In a way, for me, it's, a big love story, the entire book. And a lot of that is about that father's code, in a sense, of how to carry yourself, how to work hard, just life, having that father figure. And obviously, I lose my dad at an early age, and it's about my journey going forward without him and my path that I was able to take with everything that he taught me. And at the end of the day, I consider myself a pretty normal person that's willing to work hard and go through quite a bit, but I got to experience some pretty amazing things, be a part of some great teams because of the mental fortitude and the father's code, if you will, that helped guide me through my entire journey. So,
well, absolutely. So, yeah. And it is. I mean, you depicted it very well. It is a love story, the entire book. I know your relationship with your dad, Jeff, was something special, and it did very, very sadly come to an abrupt end.
Yeah.
Your dad instituted in you that attitude that you could accomplish anything that you set your mind to do.
Yeah, he did. I mean, and that started at a young age in the junkyard, with just building confidence in small tasks and the accountability to do things on my own. And just over the years, as I started to grow up and get, older, we write down our workouts, and he'd show me how much I grew from year to year. And, then I played on my first junior national rugby team at 16. I was the youngest kid on the team, and just kind of really showing through action that, whatever work you put in is going to be the result that you're going to get. And that started off at a young age and kind of progressed and carried me through everything that I did in my life.
Well, Nate, it certainly carried through throughout your entire life, including when you were a walk-on at the Ohio State University Buckeyes football team. Tell us a little bit about what that was like, walking on at one of the storied programs in the Big Ten and in the nation, and then playing and having such a great career.
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Columbus, Ohio, there's no other school you want to go to other than Ohio State. But I was a rugby player. And one of the last conversations I actually had with my dad, was about me wanting to walk onto the football team and leaving behind my rugby career that I've put together to that point. And he was extremely supportive, and obviously he passed the next day. And that was kind of, in a way, a promise I wanted to keep to him. And so I went for it, and it was a grueling process. But, in a way, I had played against some of the best, athletes in the world. I had played in three junior World Cups up to that point, played against the team in South Africa that 22 of its 26 players were under professional contracts. So, I mean, I wasn't just, lollygagging around. in my spare time. So when I went to walk onto the football team, I had quite a bit of confidence in my athletic ability. But the hardest part was definitely the football. Football is the ultimate game of chess. It humbled me very much to try to, well, to see how much I needed to learn. And for me, because of that, the quickest way to get on the field and to get recognized was special teams. And I could, you know, very quickly just line up and run down the field and try to tackle the guy with the ball without knowing much about football. So that was something I gravitated towards very early on. And just grinded it out, worked extremely hard, earned the respect of my teammates, ended up getting put on scholarship, and played well enough to get noticed. And draft day came around, and sure enough, I got drafted by the New England Patriots in 2012, and was with them for nearly a decade, 8 years. Been a part of some really great teams there, and it's been a hell of a ride. Now, obviously, with the New York Giants last year, I'll go back there when I'm currently out doing rugby again. But once I get done with this, I'll go back to New York. And yeah, it's been quite a ride.
The amazing thing is, and a lot of people don't realize this, Nate, is that certainly you played world-class rugby, but you had never played high school football. And to walk on at The Ohio State University, is almost unheard of, period, yeah. Let alone for someone who had never played high school football.
Right. I wanted to play high school football. I chose not to my senior year. I think at the end of the day that not playing high school football, being at a school like Ohio State, kind of stuck in my rugby career, you know, no more junior World Cups, stuck playing club rugby. That culmination of things and the desire of myself to be a professional athlete, those things that I brewed up into a perfect storm to, you know, say, you know what, screw it, I'm going to go try to play at Ohio State. And I wasn't really worried about the prestige and the players or anything like that. I knew, you know, it's like I learned in the junkyard that if every day was a process and the work that I put in and day out was going to show me what type of reward I deserved. And that was something I worked extremely hard at, and was a great, great start for my journey, for sure.
Nate, you mentioned the junkyard a couple of times already. Fill us in for what that means. Was that like some pickup football, rugby games in a junkyard, or what was that?
No, it was a real junkyard. A real junkyard.
A real junkyard. I grew up in a real junkyard.
Oh, no kidding.
And we had a family-owned salvage business. That's our fancy way of calling our junkyard salvage business.
Yeah.
My dad called himself an urban farmer. So, there you go. we had this family-owned junkyard that was in the family for four generations or so. That was, you know, as a young kid, I got put to work pretty early there, but it was also a playground. You know, I got to ride dirt bikes, and I'd have my friends come up, and we'd paintball and, you know, move the cars around and make a little course, and I could beat up the cars with baseball bats or shoot BB guns. And it was this major playground.
Sounds fun.
At the same time, it was a place where I learned how to work very early on in my life. And working there, you live with your hands, it's hot. It's, you know, still in the summertime, it's definitely hot. It was hard work, and it definitely laid a good foundation for me.
Nate Ebner is our guest, former New England Patriot, world-class rugby player as well. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Nate Ebner is here, and Nate, the new book, Finish Strong, A Father's Code and A Son's Path, a terrific book, and as you said at the top of our interview, really a love story, and it truly, truly is. But let's talk a little bit about after Ohio State, drafted by the Patriots in the sixth round. What was it like to be in camp with Bill Belichick and company?
At first it was, you know, a bit intimidating because you know how good of a team that you're coming into, and you just want to be somebody that helps and work hard. But at the end of the day, like everything else in my life, whether it be the junkyard or walking on at a house day or playing or, you know, even my first couple of years in New England, it's like how hard I work day in and day out is going to kind of determine what, you know, the path that my career takes. And that was, you know, it's funny, Bill, one of the first things I remember Bill saying to me was, you know, I told him, like, I'm excited to be there and all that. And he goes, but you're ready to work, right? And I was like, duh. You know, in my mind, I'm like, I come from blue collar. I'm a hard worker at heart. And, you know, he just wanted to reiterate, like, we were going to work hard, which that's what he's all about. I learned even more about hard work being around him, paying attention to the details and, you know, being consistent in everything that you do. But yeah, man, that was funny to me when he said that. I don't know any other way than working hard. So it was a good fit for me. And, you know, obviously I found a little role niche that I could cut out for myself and really help the team, for quite a few years. So it was a great experience. I'm extremely thankful to the Patriots organization. And, like I said earlier, was a part of some really great teams with some great teammates through all those years. And it was, like I said, an amazing experience.
Well, no question about it. And as Ken mentioned, three championships. Also, you did punt coverage and kickoff coverage, and you were an expert at both. Which one did you like the most, punt coverage or kickoff coverage?
From a coverage standpoint, you know, for me, I don't know. I like them both. They're different, very different. Kickoffs are, you know, kind of like a race to the ball, and they're very chaotic. A lot of times I got back to the bench and me and Matt Slater would sit next to each other and I'd be like, what'd you see? And he'd be like, I don't know. And I'd be like, me either. It was a blur. it's definitely the fastest play in football and arguably all sports with the violence of it all. And, you know, I felt like, it's crazy, but at the same time, I really appreciate punt coverage because punt coverage starts with protection first. I mean, until you punt that ball, you need to protect that punt. So it's kicked and then you have to cover. And that aspect of it, whether the team's bringing a rush or they're trying to hold you up so they can get a return, it brings, like I said earlier, it's a part of that chess match that is football. So, I really appreciate that kind of as someone who kind of makes the calls and the protection of our punt team. I really do enjoy that part. I think those tackles coming down on punt where the guy catches the ball standing still and you've got to break down and, you know, he can just juke you one way or the other. Those are extremely hard tackles to make. So, yeah, I mean, there are things I appreciate about those. It's hard to say which one I like more than the other.
So you were kind of the, I don't know if they call it the upback or, but the person closest to the punter, for most of your career in punt coverage and you would call out, the different schemes that you saw on the punt return team.
Well, yeah. And then we have protection calls based on, you know, what their look is. So I'm kind of calling the play at the line of scrimmage, if you will.
Yeah, not an easy thing to do. And, you know, we talk about the three Super Bowl titles. Do any one of the three stand out more than the others?
You know, I think they're all – this is something I kind of get into a little bit in the book is how all three are special in their own way, no doubt. But for me personally, if I had to pick one, you know, Super Bowl 51 was amazing to come back against Atlanta, especially for me as a special teams guy that had a huge role in that game. I mean, if you look at the stats of starting field position between their team and ours, it was like over in the team yardage wise, which is over a first down every series of the ball. So We had a good game, but just the team unity to come back, you know, the feeling in that locker room, in such a desperate situation or whatever you want to call it, the extreme composure that we had as a team, you know, it was no doubt in anyone's mind we were coming back. It was a weird thing. There wasn't, you know, any doubt. And, you could see it throughout the locker room across all the players, and we all kind of knew. And, you know, Bill's thing was kind of just saying, we can't score, you know, 28 points in one play. We need to string good play after good play after good play together and put the ball in the end zone and, you know, stop them and do it again, give ourselves a good field position, get the offense in a position to score again. And, like, we all knew that, and there was no doubt we were going to do it. And as it started to happen in the game, you know, you could tell it was happening, and Atlanta could kind of feel it getting taken away from them, and there was really nothing they could do about it. It was pretty awesome.
It was truly awesome, and really right up there, if not the greatest comeback in the history of sports, it's right up there.
It's worthy of that conversation. I'll say that.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about that. So Nate, just bring us up to date now. When are the Olympic tryouts?
Yeah, I mean we're in the process of that right now. So you know that's currently taking place. So we'll see how that goes, and then the Olympics is obviously kind of the end of July there, and then once that's finished with, assuming I'm healthy and everything, I'll go to New York, and we've kind of agreed on terms and all that. It just obviously my situation is different, so I don't consider myself a free agent. Like we're all set on a contract. I just need to go and pass a physical and those types of things, those little things. But I'm planning on going back there and hopefully having a great season going into my 10th NFL season, which is just kind of crazy. I never thought I'd play this long and or make it in general. So just the whole journey is a one step at a time, one day at a time thing, and that's what it's been through and through. So
there must have been a great comfort level going to the New York Giants with Joe Judge as head coach, your former special teams coach with the Patriots.
Yeah, absolutely. Every year in my NFL career, he's been a part of it. I think he was assistant. His first year, I was a rookie, and he's been around ever since. And he had a lot of great years as was the coordinator on the special teams with me and Matt Slater. And you know, he went to New York as a head coach, obviously, and you know, I was in a position where I, you know, either needed to make a move or you know how it goes. Free agency comes for players at all points, and you go just as teams go to their best options. As a player, you kind of got to go to yours, and for me, that's what it was. And you know, obviously, I have a great relationship with Joe, and continue to have that, and just love what he's doing there in New York, and want to help in every way that I can as an older guy, as a leader, as someone who understands what, you know, team he's trying to put together, what culture he's trying to build, and really reinforce that as someone in the locker room. So,
Nate, getting back to that Patriots, three titles on that team, what is one or two players that really were huge contributors to that team that people don't talk about a whole heck of a lot in the media? You know, we're obviously broadcasting to Patriot Nation here, and so I think people would be interested in your perspective of a couple players that really contributed a lot that weren't really highlighted that much during that run.
I think we're talking to one of them.
Well, certainly that. No doubt about that. No doubt about that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I'll say, you know, if I could think of others that come to mind right away, obviously Matt Slater, captain and leader as well. I think of Brandon Bolden, who comes in and does whatever he needs to do, whether it be offense, special teams, That guy's a freak. He's awesome. I think of Patrick Chung, mainly. I think Pat is probably the number one on that list. Just how consistent he's been over the years and what he's done for our team and how his longevity to be able to play, frequently and consistently as does, you know, Pat is definitely high up on that list. You know, Ryan Allen, the punter, had some great games in all of those. You know, I could go down the line. I mean, offensive linemen, there's just so many people that play a role that if they don't do as well as they do, even though you never see anything of it, you know, Tom doesn't throw the ball like he does, or Julian doesn't get to catch it, or, you know, James White doesn't get through or have the opportunity to run with the ball. You know, there's just so many other people that do their part so well that, you know, it makes other people's jobs even possible. So, I mean, that's football. It's the ultimate team game. So whenever anybody's celebrating by themselves, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Now, you speaking of Patrick Chung, as you mentioned, you and Patrick have an interest in a rugby team that plays in New England.
Yeah. Obviously, I had an opportunity with the MLR, Major League Rugby, just started up, and me being so close to rugby, had a good opportunity there. Pat has shown a lot of interest in rugby over the years. We've been locker mates for forever, and you know, he's always talked about it. Obviously, had a good opportunity. It made a lot of sense, and you know, he joined me in the venture, and it's been fun. And watching it grow over the couple of years, even through COVID, which has really put a hole in a lot of companies and people's careers, for the MLR to do as well as it's done through all of that, it's pretty awesome. And yeah, I mean, it's been fun. I'm excited to see how it goes here in the next year.
So, Nate, I think people would certainly find the answer to this question that I'm about to ask in your book, Finish Strong, A Father's Code and A Son's Path by Nate Ebner. But Nate, what advice would you give to young athletes out there, you know, in high school, playing football or just anything? What advice would you give to them, and what advice would you give to their parents?
Well, I'd give their parents different advice than I would give them. I'll start with that. I'd give their parents the advice to let them, you know, as my dad did to me, allow me to choose what I love on my own and go after it as someone who wants to do it every day, not someone that's forced to do it because their parents are telling them, you know, this is what they need to do. I mean, it's one thing to kind of direct someone. It's another to kind of shove them, right? And, you know, kids, you know, it's too hard to be a professional athlete, really anything in life at the highest level if you don't love the process and you don't love everything that entails what you have to do leading up to the games. Like, we have so much other stuff with meetings and other training that's so competitive and combine stuff that you have to do from college. I mean, there's just so much other stuff that if you don't enjoy the process, then it's just, like I said, too hard to do and too hard to do at a professional level. So, like, parents need to get out of the way and let kids find their own passion. You know, you're a lot more motivated when it's your passion, not you're trying to live a life for someone else's passion. So that's what I would say to parents. But to kids, you know, when I think about it, that's a big question. The first thing that comes to mind to me is really telling young people to try to get in the habit of doing everything in their life as best as they can, starting with the small tasks. And if you can't do that, you've got too much on your plate. But just little habits, even whether it be making your bed or doing the dishes or whatever, cleaning the house. I mean, do those things with intention, like to do them as best as you can do them. And that type of behavior carries over into everything else that you do. And then it becomes more of a habit to do things as best as good as you can do them, rather than it. Okay, now it takes effort because I need to do this well. Versus the idea that everything you do in your life, you already try to do it as good as you can, and that just becomes your behavior. And that is something I would challenge kids to do, is try to do everything they do as best as they can.
And the book is outstanding, Nate. And is there anything that, you know, what would you like people to take from this book? What would you like them to remember?
I think it's really dependent upon you as a reader. You know, if you're a parent or have a great relationship with your parents, or you wish you had a great relationship with your parents and you're going to have kids one day. I mean, I think it's a great kind of example of a father-son relationship that, you know, people could aspire to have that. And, just from a human story perspective, that's a big part of my story. I think, people who want to feel inspired, to do great things, I think you can kind of look into all the different things that I've done in my life and find inspiration and guidance on kind of how to go about those things on a day-to-day basis. I think people who've experienced tragedy in their life can take something from this book and understand that tragedy doesn't have to be something that's a defining moment in your life that dictates the rest of your life, that you can live a life with purpose, and that, you know, like I said, that tragedy doesn't have to define who you are, and you can do positive things. It's a book for people who enjoy sports, especially football, and want to look into the Patriots and Super Bowls and what those experiences are like, but definitely someone who likes rugby. I mean, you'll get a look into the U.S. landscape and obviously the Olympics, what that's like, and obviously it's overall the journey is a sports story, so that's there. But I think there's just a lot in the book, and it's really, I wouldn't say specially tailored to sports fans. I would say more so the human story, father-son relationship, love story, hard work, and you know, inspiration, and a little tragedy that you have to overcome, and that's really the basis around it all, and pushing forward. So,
well, outstanding book, Nate, and we really appreciate your time today, and we wish you all the best with the upcoming Olympics and the tryouts you're going through right now, and also wish you luck with the New York Giants in the upcoming season.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. Hopefully everything goes well and it goes as planned, but we'll see one day at a time. But thanks for having me, guys.
Best of luck, Nate.
We appreciate your time, Nate. Thanks so much. Nate Ebner, and author of the new book, and a great one, too. It's called Finish Strong, A Father's Code and A Son's Path. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feldis and Kale. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back, Feldis and Kale. Great to have you along with us today at 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. And Feldis and Kale proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And wow, it was a pleasure to have Nate Ebner with us. 8 years as a New England Patriot. This is a pretty good percentage, Dan Feldis. 8 years a Patriot, 3 Super Bowl titles.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Don't get a lot better than that, you know.
It really doesn't. And, man, I think, you know, so many, because it is such a great team sport, really, but even the most ardent of football fans find it difficult sometimes to name, you know, more than 5 or 6 players on their team because yeah. – So the offensive linemen pretty much go unheralded. The special teams players go unheralded. And I'm glad we could have Nate on today to talk about what is a great book for so many reasons. Feldes and Kale, and our guest now is Lizabrit Solsky, Vice President of Strategy and Corporate Development for Granite State Independent Living, a lawyer by trade. Lisa Britt has been involved with Medicaid and the mission-driven healthcare world for over 20 years, and she joined Granite State Independent Living about a year ago. And we welcome you, Lisa Britt, to Feldes and Kale. Great to have you along with us.
Good morning.
Well, Lisa Britt, thank you so much for joining us. And Lisa Britt has done so much over the course of her career, and we've worked together on some healthcare issues and Medicaid issues over the years, and always a pleasure to work with, and always focused on purpose and getting things done. And grateful to have you on the show. Talk about, first and foremost, Granite State Independent Living. What's the mission of GSIL? What does it do for Granite Staters?
Great question, Dan, and thank you for your kind words. So Granite State Independent Living is the statewide independent living center, and that is a federal designation. And what it means is that we provide 20 programs, supports and services to people in the Granite State who live with disabilities. So everything from help around the house, getting up and starting your day, getting out of the house, transportation, home access modifications, education, job search, you name it. What sets us apart, though, is the philosophy that undergirds all of our work, which is 100% person-centered. The saying in the movement is nothing about us without us. And so in keeping with that, 50% of our staff and more than 50% of our board are people who live with disabilities, because it's so important to focus their words and their interests in every conversation that we have.
Well, that's, I think, for many folks out there who are unaware of GSIL, how would, before we move on to New Hampshire Gives and the wheelchair basketball tournament, which we played in this weekend, play with quotation marks around that, attempted to. Can you give folks the contact information for GSIL if they want to get in touch, either for services or to figure out how to help?
Sure. So the best thing to do is to go to our website, www.gsil.org. Everything that you might want to do, whether it's just to educate yourself more about the mission and the services, to reach out because you're in need of services, or to find a way to support us through either donations or volunteering or something else, it's all right there on our website.
That's wonderful. And this past weekend was Hoops on Wheels, the 10th annual, and I'm proud to say, Ken, my 10th consecutive
Wow.
Hoops on Wheels tournament. We really got on a roll out there. That's a
yes,
good joke.
I get that. Yes, I got it. I got it.
Lisa Britt, if you could tell folks a little bit about what Hoops on Wheels is, and how much did it raise this year, and that sort of thing, and how many teams and people participated?
Glad to. So, as you said, it's the 10th annual Hoops on Wheels. First time we did it outdoors, and that was an accommodation because when we were planning, we were still kind of up to our elbows in COVID restrictions, and we wanted to make sure it was as safe as well and as welcoming as possible this year. We didn't want to forego the event. So Hoops on Wheels is basically where we played basketball in wheelchairs. Most of the teams, though, are comprised of people who don't use a wheelchair every single day. And this really creates a humbling experience for, and I can say this myself, as you know, because I play. But even if you're a great basketball player on 2 feet, it means it is not transferable to being a great basketball player in a wheelchair. So it puts able-bodied people literally into the chair of their disabled counterparts. And then the reverse kind of happens in the afternoon, where we actually have competitive wheelchair basketball games. So these are teams who only compete in wheelchairs, and they're excellent. They will put in probably double and triple the score of the able-bodied folks who play in the first part of the day. And so, you know, what I love about this, especially for people who might be newly injured, newly disabled, new to a wheelchair, this is a way to show that, you know, your life isn't over. You can still succeed and overcome and actually beat your able-bodied peers. So that's the concept. It really is, you know, the metaphor, you know, you walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. Well, you're going to roll a mile in somebody else's chair. The other thing I would say is it is the most fun. I don't know about you, Dan, you've done it for 10 years, but every time I get off the court, my face hurts from smiling and laughing so much.
Yeah.
both because, you know, you're laughing at yourself.
Right.
Laughing at, you know, your friends and your colleagues. But there's just so much good-natured sportspersonship out there. It's a blast.
No question about it. And it was a blast again this year. Outdoor, a little hot, but we made it through. And we made it all the way through the day. You know, there's some blisters and stuff like that working that wheelchair. But in any event, today is New Hampshire Gives, or the start of New Hampshire Gives. And Lisa Brooke, can you talk a little bit about that and how people can give to a nonprofit like GSIL or others?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is an annual event hosted and sponsored by the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits. And they create this 24-hour like marathon almost of support for 600 and something New Hampshire not-for-profits. And they host the platform. Every not-for-profit that wants to participate has their own page. And it is this day of giving, as the name implies. But it also really promotes all of the incredible work of not-for-profits and how they really are an important part of not just the safety net, but the infrastructure of New Hampshire service economy and the economy writ large. So this is a way for people to get involved. You know, I was reminded our mutual friend, Jen Alford-Keeser, when she was running for the Senate, said, you know, she'd meet people all the time who said, look, I don't go door to door. I don't volunteer. What I do is write checks. So if you're the kind of person that likes the not-for-profit community, but your way to support is to write a check, this is your day.
Our guest is Lisa Britsolsky. She is the Vice President of Strategy and Corporate Development for Granite State Independent Living. We'll take a break, a very quick one here on 103.9 1450 WKXL and htalkradio.com. Our program presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. We are back, Feldis and Kale, on, well, this great morning or afternoon, depending on when you're
listening to us
on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Our guest on this segment of the show is Lisa Britsolsky, VP of Strategy and Corporate Development for Granite State Independent Living. And I know, Lisa Britt, that Granite State Independent Living helps people either enter or re-enter the workforce, and many people are kind of in that boat right now. What can you tell us about that?
Sure. So, great question. So, I think, first and foremost, one thing that we might take for granted as able-bodied people is that when we want to get up and go to work in the morning, we get up and, you know, do our thing, make our coffee, you know, shower, whatever, get in the car and drive to work. For a lot of our friends who have disabilities, they need a caregiver who is going to help them with all of those tasks so that they can get up, get out the door, and go to work. So that's one huge component right there. We need that hands-on caregiver support so that people with disabilities can be productive members of our society. But we do a lot of work to help connect people to work, to promote their skills or sharpen their skills. So maybe their disability has had to created a detour in their career path. So we work hands-on with folks through Voc Rehab and other programs to help maximize the skills that they have, help them to promote those skills and connect to a job. The other sort of tricky thing for people with disabilities is that they also rely on a lot of public benefits. So there is a really delicate balance between engaging in meaningful work and earning income, but not earning so much that it jeopardizes their public benefits, which fund a lot of those services that I talked about.
What other services do you provide, Lisa Britt?
So I mentioned a little bit about the home access modifications. This is actually a joint venture between GSIL and New Hampshire Housing Finance. And with any amount of luck, based on a grant that we've submitted, we'll be able to quadruple our impact. But this is a program whereby we do modifications for people who are experiencing changes in their level of ability, either because of aging or because of changes just in their disability status, like maybe their functionality is declining a little bit. So some of the basics are changing doorknobs to louvered doorknobs, so you can use your elbow or you don't necessarily need to grasp and turn. We'll do grab bars in bathrooms. We might change the width of doorways so that it will accommodate a wheelchair. We do ramps in and outside of the home to make sure that people have a way to get in and get out while using their wheelchair. So that is a significant amount of investment in the community. The people who are eligible need to be homeowners, and they need to have an indication from their treating physician about, you know, what are the barriers in their home and how we could overcome them with this investment of modifications. So we love that program. It's one of the amazing things that enhances quality of life. And I would just say as a footnote that, you know, during the 15 months of COVID, when New Hampshire was at the top of the charts for fatalities in nursing facilities, many of our consumers at GSIL, their only other option if they can't be supported in community is to go to a nursing home. So during COVID, we really had to double down because it was clear that not only is being at home everybody's preference, it's more cost effective, but during the pandemic, it was the safest option. So, you know, against the backdrop of the horrible loss of life in nursing facilities, at GSIL, of the hundreds of consumers that we serve every day and the literal army of workforce that supports them in their homes every day, we had fewer than 20 cases of COVID and no fatalities. Wow. And that's something we're really proud of.
Well, Lisa Britt, that is something to be proud of, no doubt about it. And thank you and GSIL for all that you do to help Granite Staters with disabilities live full and inclusive lives in their home, in their communities, not only now, but through that trying 15 or so months with COVID. Lisa Britt, if people wanted to contribute to GSIL, again, today is New Hampshire Gives, a kickoff of New Hampshire Gives. What is the website to do that? What's the New Hampshire Gives website? What is the website for GSIL? And we only have like 30 seconds remaining. So
easy peasy.
www.nhgives.org.
And then you can search for any nonprofit in the state that you're interested in supporting. And obviously, we're filed under Granite State Independent Living.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Lisa Britt, for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you for all that you do.
Thank you both so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Lisa Britt. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Lisa Britt Solsky, the VP of Strategy and Corporate Development for Granite State Independent Living, and they can be contacted at www.gsil.org. And if you would like to make a contribution to Granite State Independent Living or another charitable organization, nhgives.org. So there you go.
There you have it. We have a lot of wonderful nonprofits all around the state, Ken, and today is the kickoff of NH Give. So pick one or two or three, whatever you can do, and give to your nonprofit community here at www.nhgives.org.
That'll do it for this edition of Feldis and Kale. We thank you very much for joining us. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.